League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
And yeah, this week has been very hectic, mainly because I'm still playing catch up, in all honesty, with everything that's gone on in the last few weeks. And I literally have walked in my front door from being in the gym. You'll be proud of me.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
How's the training going?
I feel like I'm getting on top of some of the niggles and stuff. So the big goal has always been like just to try and strengthen around my knee, primarily. Also, like, I want to lose a bit of weight. I want to be a bit stronger in my body because I feel like it would be really beneficial for a lot of the off-road stuff I'm doing.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
And I've got a mate helping me out called Adam, who is... the thing is with me is I get very bored in any form of gym. So it's all about finding things that mentally challenge me as well as physically challenging me. And the current one has been box jumps.
Oh my God, they're savage, aren't they?
And I don't like heights. it sounds ridiculous, but I really don't like heights. And so the first time I did it, every single time I was having to step up, just step down, super, super hesitant about it. And then after I'd done like one or two, I was all right. And then the problem was I was always jumping quite close to the edge, as in the side nearest to me. And Adam was like, I want you to be jumping.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Right, the back of your foot needs to be in the middle, and I've got big feet, so that means the front of my feet is like almost to the end on the other side. And he is like, and I just couldn't do it. So we got, I just couldn't. My head just wouldn't allow me to do it for some reason. So then we got a resistance band and put it round the box, and it was a line. And every single time I'd hit it because of the line.
That's clever that he's done that. They're so surprisingly difficult. I don't know why. You look at it, when you see people do box jumps, you're like, ah, that's chilled. I can do that. And then when you do it, they're horrific.
They're really hard.
You should try those. I was training with a friend of mine like last week, Bianca, and she's like, okay, cool. You literally hold weights, whatever you want, and then just walk over the one person is just walking over, literally while the other one's doing Romanian deadlifts. And I'm just like, surely this isn't going to be hard. And you're like, after a while, you're just knackered.
Yeah.
It's the exertion of lifting yourself up with extra weight that's pushing you through. It really does. It's so deceiving.
He had me today. I did the box on its, I guess, highest side with two weights and literally just holding the weights at my side, stepping up and then stepping down. He's like, do it 10 times with a different leading foot. And I was like, yeah, okay. And then after like six or seven, I was like, this is fucking hard. This is ridiculously hard. Just because it was the highest height on the box, I think, is like 75 centimeters. And it's quite substantial. It's well above your, like, for me, that's well above my knee height. That's like middle of the thigh height. And I'm just like, holy fuck, like, this is quite a step up. And also, the reason for doing things like that is it really is to try and help strengthen up around my bad knee, which is the thing which has been the problem child for so fucking long now. So being able to sort of work on that, and today we've basically been trying to do like 3 times a week, which for me is, I've never done that ever in my life. So because I hate gyms, and actually I was supposed to be down in doing an event this weekend in Southampton, Friday technically, so I would have been going down there on Thursday, but unfortunately the event's been cancelled because of petrol shortages, which is ridiculous, isn't it? And so they cancelled it because it's not so much, I mean, obviously the element of people getting there is a charity ride for ActionAid. So there's that element about people getting there, which is a problem, but also they're concerned about, you know, having mechanics there, having ambulances there, all that kind of stuff. And I think they had a couple of hundred people signed up. So they were just like, unfortunately, we're going to have to cancel it. So normally we would space the sessions out Monday, Wednesday, Friday. But this week, because I was going to be away, it was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So every morning I've been waking up and been like, oh, fuck.
It's just a savage. We have to knock it out like that. We had we did like a fitness tournament competition on fucking Sunday, and it was horrific. I mean, horrific. It was just like, it was you had 5 exercises, 4 21-minute exercises, which were just nonstop, with a variety of things that you had to do. It was the first time Bobak and I, basically my business partner, we were just like, oh, well, we were kind of sponsoring it slash just sort of co-presenting it with this woman called Sarah, who puts on this thing called Outtrain, which is great. But we were like, oh, let's just throw in a team. We entered the team, but we went with 2 girls who are absolute beasts. And they were just like, yeah, we can't, you know, that we have to go in the pro section. And we're like, this is our first ever competition. They were like, yeah, but okay, sure. We'll go along with this. To be fair, they dragged us through it. But I think I was speaking to my sister yesterday, and I was like, yeah, after the first event, my throat was closing up. And she was like, yeah, you can get that. It's just basically shocked your system, where it's just, you're struggling to breathe, and you just start breathing slower. And I was like, yeah, it felt pretty bad. And then it was like, I sat down for a bit, I had to rest and put on a brave face. And they were like, yeah, we're going again. I was like, fair enough, let's go.
Oh, man. What we do to our bodies, eh?
Exactly. We absolutely destroy them. And when I was thinking about it afterwards, I was like, what the hell did I just do? I spent like 5 to 6 hours like just hammering my body with different exercises, just going for it. And it's just like, how often can you do this? To be fair, I don't really pick up many injuries or niggles. Next day I was like, okay, cool. What have I done to my right hip flexor? what did I actually manage to do? And then just resting it. But it was actually, it's nice to have a few rest days. Like, I don't, like, it's been pretty manic full on. When you can actually not do too much and relax the body. Although I'm scared about what's coming next, you know, when you have to restart again, just that feeling.
Yes. So Race to Spain, the podcast, which is coming out next before this one, basically, is a recap on the whole race of Spain, the race off Spain. That sounds weird. The Badlands gravel race. And I did 67 hours of riding over like 4 days, something stupid like that. And which is bonkers. It's bonkers hours in terms of the amount of recovery and rest. And like one night I had 20 minutes of sleep and then carried on. Like, that's just the nature of these kind of races. And to be honest, it wasn't 20 minutes of sleep by choice. It was kind of like, I went to go and get some sleep, and then there was hundreds of mosquitoes buzzing around. And I was like, well, I'm going to carry on riding now. So I did that 60, 70 odd hour a week. And then I was in the Netherlands for some work stuff, 20 plus hours on the bike, got back to the UK, and I was just literally the best way of describing it is I was shagged to the absolute shell of doing anything. And I spent not last week, the week before, just doing nothing, literally sitting on my ass because I was just exhausted. and struggling with a few niggles here and there, which is the nature of any kind of ultra distance race. You just pick up little niggles from anything. And sort of the knee issue coming back a bit, the ones that I almost always struggle with is I lose a lot of strength in my left hand. So I can't grip, which is really weird, but it's related to like a nerve damage issue I've got. And then I think I rolled my ankle or something, and I've been really struggling with that. It's kind of to be expected when you're walking up gravel mountains, these things happen. Yeah. And so I got home and spent that week doing nothing. And then I started on the bike again last week, and every single session, super easy stuff. And I was just like, I feel fucked. I feel really creaky, just tired and achy. And my coach Ken was just like, yeah, you know, this is the nature of these kind of races. You take a bit of time off afterwards and you go back into it and you just feel like you've got cobwebs effectively. Or you need to oil the joints and stuff. And then this week it's been like increasing the intensity a bit more, kind of trying getting into the momentum of it again, and then feeling okay. But the last, Monday, Tuesday and today are like three quite intense days on in terms of hours on the bike. Each one is 2 to 3 hours, and then like an hour or so in the gym in the morning. And then tomorrow is super easy. Friday's really fucking hard. Saturday's going for a really long ride. And that's kind of how my sessions go. But I've already started recording because I like talking to you, and I think you're a very good person to talk to, and you're very eloquent.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. What, mate? And there's none of that. It's very like very eloquent. And I thought I'd start recording anyway, because why not? I'm just telling you because it's polite. And you would have heard, Zoom doing that. Recording has started.
Yeah, recording has started. A big red light on the left.
Yeah. And so the reason why I have got you on is because I should actually go and get some. 1 second. Because it's easy for me to hold it. Explain it a little bit. I've got two very lovely objects in my hand, and like take away the fact of what's in the boxes, the actual packaging is just lovely. So you, Jack, spelt very interestingly. Out of interest, why is your name? It's a really, really weird thing to say. Why is your name spelt that way?
Jacek is Polish. I'm full blooded Polish.
There you go. That explains that one. So you run this little brand called Level Out, which makes really lovely boxes. That's what you do, isn't it?
That's it. More boxes inside.
What's good is, I don't know if this will pick it up, but it's such a satisfying little pop. Every time I've been going to the gym, I've been taking these little focus sachets in my drink, effectively. And I am genuinely really impressed with this product. And I'm putting it out there. You've sent me these for free. It's completely honest. We started talking because of a mutual friend of ours, Ben, my old barber back in London, who, if you don't know Ben, check out Ben. But basically, Ben put us in touch, and we've been chatting here and there about, one, this, and secondary, this product as well, which is Reset. This is something which a lot of people might be quite interested in, which is a big reason why I want to talk to you, or have wanted to talk to you on the podcast. So this is basically CBD oil, in the simplest way of explaining it to someone. But it actually tastes really nice, which I quite enjoy. And it does taste nice. Both of them taste nice. So I've been using the Focus when I've been going to the gym, and the Reset when I'm a really bad sleeper, and I've been taking this before I go to bed, basically to help me sleep. And I do generally think it helps, apart from last night, because I thought someone was trying to break into our house.
Yeah. What happened then?
It's just really windy last night. And I heard all this, I heard this big bang, and I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, what the fuck's going on? And like, you know, when you're still like half asleep and you kind of like are walking around the house, or you basically just instantly wake up and then you're like, fuck, something's going on. So I got up, turned all the lights on in the house, went through every single floor, opened all the curtains, opened the room, because I shut the doors at night, just opened every door, opened all the curtains, went through the whole house. And I was like, okay, nothing, there's nothing. And my partner's like, are you all right? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. But I've just had one of those moments where I think I've got a bit mad. And she was like, come back to bed. You need to go to sleep. But then you wake up and you're basically like, you struggle to get back to sleep straight away from that kind of thing. I do anyway. And I was just like, what the hell, you know? So generally speaking, last night was an exception, but it's, as I say, it's been very windy here. But I've been using both of these now for a while and I've been really impressed. And I thought, like, why do we not actually have a podcast to talk a bit about what Level Out is, and also a bit about CBD, because I think it's a really misunderstood thing on the market that seems to be becoming more popular, I think, because it's becoming a bit more mainstream. But for a long time, was that kind of thing that people were like, oh, you know, it's cannabis, you know, whatever it is, what is this? Getting a bit confused by it. So, you know, that's basically where I'm going with this today. And you'll realize that I don't really follow any script to just go for it. But I did very politely actually send you a list of kind of topics and stuff, which I have on my phone. And I think if we'll just sort of roll through them and hopefully people will find that useful. I think they will. So yeah, I mean, let's talk a bit about Level Out and how it all kind of started for you.
Yeah, so Level Out started by myself and my business partner Bobak, who is best mate from school. We actually went to university together, then read biology together, ended up bloody doing our dissertations together, but then went quite separate directions after uni. He went off to work at Unilever in the like an accelerated graduate sort of scheme, and then went into strategy consulting, presenting to like the C-suites of Dyson, John Lewis and Chanel, basically telling them how to work their e-com strategy. I went very differently in that respect. I worked at Red Bull in sales and marketing for a couple of years, then, which actually inspired me for a lot of the ways that we're actually working with Level Out and kind of gave me some inspiration onto what we want to do. Then went on to actually start some small kind of healthy kebab shops called Fanny's Kebabs around London. And I think just as we were kind of, we've always loved playing sport. We've always been into our fitness. We've always staying like fit and healthy in that respect. But obviously living quite sort of high-paced lives within obviously Bobek and like the strategy consultancy side of things, and me with kind of startup world within the restaurant side of things, it was always tough sort of finding the energy sometimes to put in that final session or to really be able to maximize your performance in one of those sessions that you're trying to hit. And nothing on the market resonated with us on that regard. I think like when you say the word pre-workout to most people, they get this massive aversion of like itchy skin caused by beta alanine and like just this massive boom and bust. It doesn't really suit a lifestyle of if you want to train and then actually do something during your day, right? So it's kind of like, it just didn't suit what we were trying to do. So we kind of went off on a tangent to try and create something that suited ourselves in the respect of giving us energy to kind of train and achieve that little bit extra in our sessions, as well as being something which we can take and then carry on with the rest of your day. And that's kind of the formulation of Focus came about. And it's very much as much cognitive and enhancing as sort of body energizing. And it doesn't give you this massive crash. It kind of just a slower rise. It doesn't bang like other kind of C4s and stuff like that. And it doesn't have anywhere near as much caffeine as a Red Bull or a Tenzing, et cetera. So it's kind of an all natural, healthy option to a pre-workout, which is, yeah. And it's the components, it's only got 8 components in it. It's made up of, so guarana is the form of caffeine that we have in there, which is from Brazilian little plant. And
also
then
available in Boost bars.
Yeah. Actually.
Yeah, seriously.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. The useless bit of knowledge there. I don't know why, but it is in Boost chocolate bars.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Well, I guess it's found to have lots of like antioxidant properties as well. That's being like a sort of a cognitive enhancer as well. And then we paired it with L-theanine, which promotes alpha brainwaves in your body, which helps to get rid of any of the kind of jitters that you get. So alpha brainwaves are your meditative state when you're awake. You've got 2 forms of brainwave when you're awake. You've got your alpha and beta. So your alpha is meditative, beta is your active state. And then there's a small amount of CBD, which I'm sure we'll touch on later. There's a small amount of CBD in Focus as well, which at low levels helps to sort of remove any of the jitters as well. kind of people in Silicon Valley are taking caffeine pills, which are either paired with L-theanine or CBD nowadays. So we decided to put both in for good measure. And then we've got ginseng as a cognitive enhancer, which is the element that basically manages to help you give that sort of clean, like clean-headed energy, rather than kind of being all over the place. And then BCAAs for your muscle performance and recovery, glutamine for your immune system, vitamin C and vitamin B. So it's super simple. I think what we found was a lot of the sort of pre-workout stuff that you see on the market, it's just got loads of ingredients that you just don't have a clue, or they've got several different forms of caffeine. We wanted to make it super simple, super easy, no added sugars, all natural, for the market that we're kind of targeting who aren't used to taking this sort of thing, if that makes sense. So yeah, that was the, that's the kind of focus product. And then we, then the reset product is a CBD oil, which has three terpenes in it, which are plant compounds, which give it scent and flavor, but also have been found to have anti-inflammatory and anti-stressor properties. The reason we created that was essentially, you know, as we get older, we still want to train, we still want to be at our best and sort of recover quicker. And we found that CBD was helping our recovery at that moment. It was helping us with niggles, pains, inflammations that we're getting from, you know, hammering our bodies on whether it's game days or just hard training sessions, etc. And then also really with sleep, like you said, is something which has helped us both. So that's kind of the two products. That's that pre-moment and that post-moment that we've created.
And they, I mean, it, the fact that they're so simple is something that I think appeals to me as well, as in there's not a lot of jargon in there. Because first of all, I look at the back of a packet of some pre-workout stuff from some other brands. And first of all, because I'm dyslexic, I look at it and I'm like, I don't know how to pronounce the majority of stuff on that. And secondly, I'm like, I don't even know what half of it is. And I don't even know if any of it actually is relevant to me, to be perfectly honest. And the fact that with this, I can look on the back and I can go, okay, there's, you know, 8 odd ingredients. All of them are pretty self-explanatory. And if I don't understand it, I can Google it because it's actually not that hard to spell.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds silly, but I think makes a big difference. And as you say, it's about appealing to people who aren't necessarily, I guess, like proper hardcore gym heads who are very busy, have other things to do, and are basically trying to keep themselves fit and healthy while still having a normal life as much as possible. And you know, with the focus, it's literally, I could smell it inside here. And I opened the lid. It's just a tiny sachet that you can just put in your drink, basically, and then shake it up, and then bosh, it's that simple. I really like the fact that it is a sachet done. I don't have to measure it out. So often you have to, you know, you buy these kind of products and you get a massive bag of it and you're like, shit, how much do I actually put in here? You know, that becomes another trick.
And I think that resonates with the sort of crowd that we're going after, because I think the reality is the customer that we're trying to appeal to is somebody who trains, you know, three times a week and more. But they don't see themselves as an athlete. They don't see themselves in that respect. They just see themselves as an average person who's staying fit. However, there's this opportunity to kind of maximize it. I think the way we see focus is like, you know, you look at protein nowadays. 5 to 10 years ago, protein was taken by weightlifters and bodybuilders, and it was quite a niche product in that respect. Now everyone takes protein post training, right? You that is your post moment. You know that can help your muscle recovery and allow you to kind of be at your best sooner, quicker. So that's kind of, we want to try with focus, it's create that pre moment for the everyday person, because a lot of these things aren't targeted at them at the moment. And I think that's why we kind of made it in single form sachets, because like you said, having pots and powders is still a bit of an unknown to quite a lot of people, and it's a competitive version. So, and it's not easily transportable, and we kind of wanted to make it look nice in that respect. Like obviously the design's been pretty important to us, so we wanted to make that something which people don't look at and don't see, oh God, that's a really intense pre-workout multicolored box with like this kind of this powder that I have to chuck in, and it's really sweet. And then, you know, I feel a bit ill after it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it makes it tingly and weird, or something that has a ridiculously hench man on the packaging. I find that really off-putting as well. I don't think many brands don't tend to be doing that as much now, but like 5 years ago, there's always like some muscly, you know, meathead on the packet who would, meathead's a really harsh description of someone like that, but I'm going to go, you know, some very Herculean man, basically with his chest out or whatever, and ripped to pieces in the packaging. And I would just look at that and I'm like, that doesn't resonate with me at all. As it, you know, I used to be a very overweight child. So I look at that and I'm like, no, don't ring with that. And then as, you know, with cycling, very few cyclists are ripped in any sense of the word. Like, it just it's not really a thing in cycling. You know, it's not the kind of thing you're necessarily focusing on training at the end of the day. And also genetically, it's very hard to be ripped. I was listening to an interview with Hugh Jackman, who was talking about him as Wolverine. And I mean, I love Hugh Jackman. I don't know anyone that doesn't. He just comes across as a really nice guy. But he was saying in the I think it was the film The Wolverine, he was like passing out on set because he was having to dehydrate himself so much, so he looked so ripped. Like, that's fucked. That's really fucked up.
The thing is, you look at people who are training. I mean, like, you're right. Genetics make a huge amount of difference. Also, I can't imagine what these people are eating and how many times they're training a day to actually be able to achieve this size, or what they're taking is the other side of things. But it's like, you know what I mean? It's crazy, because I personally train a lot, but it's really like, it's hard to keep weight. It's hard to put on weight quite a lot of time. I know it's a terrible thing to say, but people are like, oh, you can't complain about that. But it's one of those things where if you're living busy life, you're training and you're going, it's sometimes tough. But it's like, that side of things is you've got to put a shift in. And I completely agree, like the branding of quite a lot of things, I think, changing now, but a lot of it is focused for that market, for the CrossFit side of things. And I think for us, we're trying to look at a broader market, which is, you know, people who are working, you know, class-based exercises, who then go to the office and have to work and have to actually execute on things, or long people who are doing more sort of long distance and endurance like sports, because I think actually our product works for that, because it's a longer term hit. It's not just this boom and bust. You can take it along the road, and I think we tested it in that respect. But lots of, we do a fair bit of cycling ourselves, but nothing to your scales in that respect. But just like, it's always helped us with that. And it kind of gives you that longer term ride. And I think actually with focus as well, because we chucked in BCAAs and glutamine, like I think quite a lot of the people that we spoke to who were, you know, when we were talking to people about products they use, they weren't supplementing with glutamine or BCAAs. And I was like, but you're doing so much exercise, like you're running your levels down, and you need to make sure that, you know, your glutamine levels are depleted. Means you're going to be more susceptible to infection. So take some, put it into your diet, and then BCAAs as well. Such a simple supplement to add into the mix. So I think that's kind of why we wanted to create something just like a bit of a all-in-one for those people who probably don't take pre-workout right now. And they probably also don't supplement with BCAAs or glutamine as well. So it's a nice little addition to it. Gives you that kick.
Yeah, I completely agree. And then the other, obviously the big topic of CBD oil, as I sort of mentioned briefly earlier, it feels like it's something that for a long time was kind of hush hush and has sort of slowly gained popularity. But then it seemed like there was a massive like rush of about 5 million and 1 brands doing it all at once. And I think I said to you when you and I first started chatting, is my concern, I was like, I'm completely open to the idea of it. And I can understand the benefits and the uses of it. But my concern is knowing the legitimacy of the product, because there's so much out there. And that was always the thing I was worried about. And I think you summed it up very well to me by talking about that a bit. I can't remember how you said it, but you explained it to me in a very good way. It's very eloquent.
Yeah, I think it's been a really weird market, because it obviously exploded and there was so much chatter about it. I think obviously America's ahead of us, like within the CBD market, quite heavily. And much larger size there, especially with the weed market, et cetera, being legal in various states. I think what we saw here was then there was a lot of people, every Tom, Dick or Harry, you could easily set up a white labeled CBD company and start selling product. And then it was pretty scathing, because then there were literally, you know, newspaper articles and scientific papers which were showing that there was CBD on the market that didn't contain any CBD at all in it. And then it made people really, really wary of like what they were purchasing. And I mean, the price point on some of this stuff is also really, really high. Mm. And they were finding people were paying 80, 90 quid for stuff that didn't have any of what it was said on the tin. And that's just terrible, right? It's just like, how can you be doing that? And that just destroys a market. But that was about, what, 2-3 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And I think it's matured a lot of the way. I think we've seen a lot of change. We've seen some US brands come into the UK market. But I think when we were looking at it, we were speaking to people and people weren't building an affinity to a brand within the CBD space. And we were like, okay, cool. So, you know, people aren't able to say what product they're buying, and they don't have full certainty in the product that for what it's got in it. So we were like, okay, cool. And also, like you said, most of them, well, I don't know if you've tried many, they were all tasted like crap as well before that. And we were like, well, let's change this. We fortunately work, like our production's all done in Manchester. and it's produced by a guy who actually went to school with. And he's got 3 degrees and a PhD in neuroscience, and is honestly just a whiz kid, right? And he's the amazing kind of doctor who is able to speak to the layperson and explain to us exactly what we're looking at, why, etc., which is so powerful, because quite a lot of the time you've got doctors who are just, you know, they know everything, but they can't contextualize it for the normal person.
Yep. We've seen that plenty with stuff with COVID, haven't we?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And it's just like, it's the way you communicate things that matters so much.
Yeah.
So Ed's been great along the journey for us to help us produce what we've produced, because I think we actually iterated Focus for about 8 to 9 months, testing it through COVID, basically training in Peckham, running up to the park and doing whatnot, and just trying to see how it impacted us. Mm-hmm. And then the reset as well was just like, okay, cool. He's got like, there's basically a lab that tests all the labs in the UK for the efficacy of their CBD. Mm-hmm. And ours is used benchmark by that lab, and that's down to his hard work, him bringing in our weeds, obviously brought in from America, from California, and then he processes it all here, and they've got an amazing factory up there, and that's given us the security and being like, okay, cool, we know that our product is of the highest quality, the flavor profile is amazing, and we've then gone and priced it at a very appropriate price point, because I think a lot of the stuff on the market is really to be honest, we've seen the margins and we're still buying at quite like low levels. We're very much a startup. Once we can crank that up, the margin is going to increase even further. But there's so many people who are just, I feel like they're overcharging people for what the product is, especially knowing what the quality they're giving. Mm. So it really chimed with us to produce something which was very transparent, very high quality, like tested thoroughly, and working with somebody who we knew was going to be producing something really great, and also adhering to all the new changes that are coming through in the UK. We've got the Novel Foods Act, which is basically another regulation that's kind of come in, which is actually, you know, there's a lot of paperwork for companies and a lot of hoops for them to jump through to make sure the product ticks all the boxes. That's also going to wean out a lot of the crap that's in the market in the UK, which is really positive. Come through, and I think we'll see some brands disappear or have to change their supply chain, basically. Fortunately, we had the option of producing in America, and we were like, or Canada as well. We stayed away from that for, I think, shipping purposes, and also to be with somebody who is very much got their finger on the buzzer here and just wants to make sure that we tick all the boxes in the UK rather than American companies. Like, we haven't, because of COVID, and I think because of the change in the regulation here, we haven't seen as many like US brands come into the UK market, which is good for us. Which allows us to kind of grow, and then we'll see. I think they'll probably come in, and the big guys will come and gobble some people up here, as and when. But we'll see where that comes to. But yeah, no, it's been a journey. I think like CBD has many connotations to sort of weed, and I think the UK is still we're breaking down barriers. Mm-hmm. You know, people still see people who smoke weed as, you know, like not very productive individuals who are stoners, etc. Yeah. However, when you go stateside, when you go to America, like Canada and America, you see such a different culture where people smoke weed socially rather than drinking, which in some ways can be argued that it's probably better for you than consuming the amount of alcohol that we consume in this country. So it's interesting to see that. But I think it is changing. And I think there's a big educational piece. I think there's also a big part to be played by, you know, NHS is obviously allowed to actually prescribe CBD now, but there's still slow on it. I think that's partly also because of education for the doctors as well, to know exactly what the benefits are and how they can prescribe it to patients. But there's a huge opportunity to kind of seep it through and get people using CBD, because I think it has so many positive attributes for people who, not only for people who've got anxiety and trouble with sleeping, but then also people within, like we're talking like the athletic space, from an inflammatory, you know, anti-inflammatory properties side of things, to wean people off of taking, you know, non-steroid anti-inflammatories, which obviously are, you know, the ibuprofens and the paracetamols of the world, which can really have damaging effect on your kidneys and your livers in the long term. But I think people aren't fully aware of the options that are out there, but I think it's becoming more and more, like, you know, known that CBD can be a natural way of you alleviating those inflammations in a different pathway, which is not going to have that negative impact on your liver and your kidneys over the long-term use of, you know, of these anti-inflammatory, you know, aspirins, paracetamols, ibuprofens, which were taken by huge numbers of athletes up to date and still are.
Yeah. It's quite well, it's, you know, even in the cycling side, it is very well known that in, you know, domestic racing up to world tour racing, you're seeing guys are basically supplementing themselves with caffeine tablets and painkillers of some form for a race. And that just isn't right. It isn't right. We shouldn't be doing that. As you say, it is very dangerous if you're doing that on a regular basis for your kidney, your liver, that kind of stuff. You're going to damage your body. I've always been of the mindset that I am only going to take painkillers if I genuinely am in absolute agony. And that's it. There's no point otherwise.
No. And it's dangerous because they're so addictive as well. And I think the reality is a lot of coaches, a lot of people are put under pressure to make sure that people can perform. And then they give them these prescriptions, which then can really harm them in the future. But it's kind of like when you're in that mentality and you're in that zone, you're kind of just going and you're like, okay, cool. I need to finish this. I need to hit that target. I need to achieve that. But I think we're slowly coming around to the point that people are like, okay, actually, you know, I feel like being healthy and wellness has changed now quite a lot from being, oh, how much can you lift? How fast can you go? And it's now a much more 360 view of your nutrition, your sleep patterns, you know, how often you train, what sort of training you're doing. Are you doing like restorative training? Are you doing, you know, yoga, stretching, Pilates, all these different elements? And I think it's really important to actually integrate that into people's lives. And I think that's a big part of why we emphasize on, you know, your reset is as important as focus, because you need to get back in the game and you need to relax. You need to allow your body to recover. And I think that's where sleep comes in. And I think when you speak to people and people are like, oh, I don't sleep much. I'm like, that's mad. Your body's just going to be struggling constantly. And it's like your ability to recover is primarily when you're sleeping and you're resting and you're giving your body that opportunity to rebuild and actually get back to its best quicker so you can actually go again. But people underestimate that and they just hammer themselves. So it's one of those things where if we can promote that and we can help people and it can improve that, then I think it's really, really, really powerful for us. And I think we've seen a lot of people get back to us and be like, okay, cool, I've been taking reset and it's really helping me with either my, you know, the longevity of my sleep or the depth of my sleep. And they're feeling better on the other side of it. And that's also, I think, also partly played by, you know, the ability to help with anxiety as well, which a lot of people struggle with before bed, which can then stop falling asleep. And that's just terrible if you're sitting there lying awake thinking about everything under the sun for no reason.
Prime example of that.
Happens to all of us, doesn't it?
And it does. It does happen to everyone. And, you know, I think, when I worked and studied in architecture, when I worked in architecture, there was very much a culture of doing all-nighters. That was just the thing. You know, you were reliant on getting a project done for a certain deadline. So the amount of times I would regularly have had, or otherwise have done an all-nighter or have had like less than 4 hours sleep was like, it was a couple of times a week, you can guarantee it. And that slowly, you know, over time just ate away at me and continually ate away at me. And eventually I think that was partly related to why I ended up quitting architecture, to be perfectly honest, because I was just burning out all the time, like no energy, didn't want to do it. All I'd end up spending the weekend doing was sleeping and gorging on food because I'd not had the opportunity to actually rest in the week. And I'm a firm believer that you can't, when you've lost that night's sleep, you can't get it back. Like you can't, no matter how, you know, if you have a good night's sleep, it's never going to be quite as good as having a week's worth of good night's sleep, as opposed to like having, you know, 6 days worth of good night's sleep and then having one really bad day and then trying to get a good night's sleep again afterwards. I'm a big believer that you can't get that back and you can't like bank it and save it. Like you need it every single night consistently. And we're starting to see, I think there's a greater understanding in the importance of sleep, thanks to things like, you know, like with the Whoop band, which both you and I use, things like you can see on a lot of the smartwatches, whether it's the Garmin, I don't even know what it is now, Phoenix 6 thing watch as well. Like they all track your sleep, things that are coming from like brands like Withings as well. Like there's so many things that I think are helping people to get a greater understanding on the importance of it. Whoop is an expensive tool, but a great tool that does actually show you in a lot of detail that, and it's fantastic for that. And it's quite clever how it simplifies it with the, you know, green, orange, red, or yellow, I guess. I always think of it as a traffic light, but it's not really a traffic light, is it? but you know, showing your recovery as well. And so I think that slowly the education is getting there and understanding the importance of it. But you know, when I was working in architecture, so you know, nearly 10 years ago is when I graduated, people didn't care for that kind of thing. It was like, you've got to get the work done. There's a deadline, it has to be hit. It doesn't matter if there's, you need three people on the project and you only have one, it doesn't matter, you've got to get it done. Maybe the culture is changing as well over the last year and a half of everything that's happened. Maybe there's been a bit more of a focus on, I guess, having the right home and work balance. You know, working from home, I think, probably has helped that for some people, not everyone, of course. From what I've heard, a lot of the sort of older generation have really struggled with the idea of working from home because they're so, you know, used to going somewhere for work and then coming home and switching off. And maybe like our kind of younger generation is a bit more open to that idea and actually allowing yourself to be a bit more flexible of when you're working and how you're working. You know, for example, starting earlier, my partner, she starts at 8 and finishes at 4. Works great for her because it means that she's got the afternoon, a larger portion of the afternoon and the evening to go out and go for a run or do whatever she fancies doing as well. And I think that's really been kind of accelerated because of, you know, a very shit situation that we've all been in, but also has forced people to adapt very quickly. And it's great that, you know, products like what you're doing at Level Out are starting to also, I guess, educate more people in that side of it, the recovery as well, as well as you know, understanding the differences with things like the, you know, producing the focus, which helps you in a very different way if you're not a traditional bodybuilder, I guess. I'm going to bring it back really, really simply though. What is CBD?
So that's quite a broad question, but I think loosely, it's basically, it's a phytocannabinoid, which behaves similarly to like molecules which we produce in our bodies naturally, which are called endocannabinoids. And what it essentially, these phytocannabinoids like CBD interact with our endocannabinoid system, which is basically a system within our bodies, which then is basically, it's a far-reaching system, which is really critical in like the regulation of things like pain, inflammation, and like circadian rhythm. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why we're seeing these studies come through and people utilizing it for pain, inflammation, sleep, is because essentially we've got, there are further studies going on constantly looking into this in more detail, but essentially the phytocannabinoid interacts with our endocannabinoid system similarly to like naturally occurring molecules within our body. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And then, this way to kind of put it is,
it's a hard thing to explain, isn't it? But I guess the next thing is like, how is CBD different from marijuana?
Yeah, so marijuana is just the slang name for cannabis sativa, which is obviously the plant. And then obviously CBD is a molecule, which is the phytocannabinoid within the plant. So it's just, it's that regard, that's the marijuana is just a slang term for the cannabis sativa plant, basically.
Yeah.
But it's I think that's, yeah, we kind of, we, every, all of our hemp is grown in the state side. So then it gets shipped over from California, where you've got good crops.
Yeah, they know how to grow it there, basically. And it's, I'd imagine that it's not only, it's also grown in a very controlled environment, as if it was harvested like a crop for a medical product, basically. It's not exactly grown in the back of someone's shed, for example, with some crazy light extracted, like some sort of, I can't even think of the TV series now, Breaking Bad style moment.
Yeah. No such joys as that. But you know, I haven't actually been to like a mass crop, which I'd love to go and see. Obviously seen lots and lots of photos. You've got quite a few in the UK, actually. We do have, like, the production side of medicinal marijuana in the UK is vast, given that we don't actually sell any really. So it's a massive export, from the UK.
My partner's sister has a medicinal marijuana farm near her house.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she stumbled upon it one day, and she was like, reported it to the police, thinking it wasn't, and then they're like, no, this is a legal one. This is allowed.
They've had to burn some before in the UK because some Utes have found them and start going for it. And they're like, well, we can't leave this here if these people have found it.
Surely burning it is like, everyone that's kind of local is going to be pretty chilled out.
Exactly. So that's not the situation, but it's yeah, they've but you know, it's yeah, Cali buds for our side of things, what we use, which
And then the next thing is like how do you extract it from the plant?
Yeah, so it's something called like it's called supercritical CO2 extraction. Mm. Essentially, you're using super high pressure CO2 to squeeze out basically the plant, separate the fats and the useful molecules. Mm-hmm. So you're moving CBD away from the rest of the plant matter, like the fibers and the proteins, under super, super high pressure using CO2. So that's just, it's just big pieces of kit that they use for that, basically.
I guess it's just like a shit ton of stuff all put in it, and basically you get these little drops of goodness coming out the other end.
Exactly. Just, yeah, precisely that.
I find factories absolutely fascinating. Like anything that makes stuff, I absolutely love it. Like when I was working in architecture, I'd always go on factory tours for, you know, whether it was marble production, you know, polished concrete, paint production, plastic, anything like that. I'd always go in them because I've always found it really interesting. There's like this, there was this program years ago that was called How Stuff Works, or How Things Works or something. Do you know it? Fucking love it. Absolutely love it. Because it's just seeing things made is really interesting. Because
there are so many bits, the pieces of the puzzle, and you're like watching it and you're like, I totally agree. It's incredible. It's fascinating to watch. And also the piece of kit they have, some are so intricate, yet some are so big. And they're just doing so many different things. You're like, oh my God, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
I'd love to see one of the Amazon, like the latest Amazon pick and pack, like places with zero human beings inside. And it's all just little robots going around doing whatever the hell they want. Terrifying yet fascinating.
Yeah, I agree. I went to two factories that I went to that I was actually found, I didn't think I'd find them as interesting as I did, but found them really interesting. One was the Cadbury's factory.
Yeah.
The one in Birmingham. It's just really interesting. And I remember going there like as a kid, and I've always like thought about that one because I went there as a kid around Easter time, and it was showing how they would make the Easter eggs. Super, like, and what I didn't realize is that, you know, basically, obviously it's a mold, they're then stuck together really simply, but the molds for every bar of chocolate, every kind of, you know, Easter egg or whatever, they just change them out. And so it's the same production line, it's just you change this mold from the start point. And yeah. In my head I was like, surely that's a complication if you're changing the mold, because an Easter egg is much bigger than a, you know, a bar of Cadbury's chocolate. The size difference is huge. So surely that affects the whole machine. And in reality, it doesn't actually affect it because the machines are so clever. They know what they're wrapping, what they're packaging and everything like that. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Like,
mad.
Absolutely ridiculous.
The programming behind all these things is just way beyond our comprehension. It's when you try and think about what people are actually programming, you're like, oh my God, I don't even want to think about it. It's not worth it. Let's just let that be.
The other one that I went to a couple of years ago that blew my mind was the Coca-Cola factory.
Where's that?
Atlanta. There's multiple of them, but the main one is in Atlanta. And Atlanta, they've got a tour you can do, and then you've got the factory, and you kind of walk through the factory and see it. And first of all, I was shocked by how much Coca-Cola owns. That's quite scary. Obviously, we see a very, very tiny proportion of that in the UK. And they have this section, the time that it blew my mind was there's this section in the tour where, you know, there's like drink dispenser things where you put your cup against it and it produces your drink, and it's basically just mixed through the machine. Yeah. So they had, I would say, roughly two of them for certain continents. So there was like two for Europe, probably three for North America, probably two for South America, another two for like India and Africa, and then probably another two for like Far East, and then like one for Russia, of whatever the particular brands were in those countries. And there's a difference in taste between Coca-Cola in America to Coca-Cola in the UK to Coca-Cola in China, for example, but also the different other brands that they own in those countries. So in the one that stood out to me the most, there's one in China that basically tasted like cold vegetable soup. It's disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. But then a lot of the stuff that was in India was ridiculously sweet as well. And I mean, I made a point of trying every single one, which was not a good decision because I felt awful for like the next couple of days. But it's crazy how much power that brand has. I mean, it's a super brand, you know. But as a tour, to understand the manufacturing process through Coca-Cola was fascinating because you don't realize that like that was originally a medicinal drink. It was a medicine, like Lucozade was originally. It was classed as a medicine. It was never classed as a, you know, recreational drink. And you know, maybe we're going to end up seeing, I don't even know how it works. Maybe we'll see some sort of CBD drink. There might even be, I don't know.
Yeah, there are already quite a few CBD drinks out there, which people take. But I think it's down to the bioavailability at that point as well, like how useful it can be. I mean, I still drink Lucozade when I get sick. It's hilarious.
I do.
It's just like, give me that original. And I think it's helping me. I'm like, oh yeah, the glucose in there is definitely helping me. It's just, it's had me since I was young. I'm never going to change.
Like it's a nostalgic kid thing though, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
But yeah. But they...
Lucozade is particularly the original and the fizzy one. Lucozade Sport, not down with that. Original fizzy Lucozade is the one.
100%. Totally agree. The orange one, it freaks me out. I'm still not a fan of that one. It has to be this. It's the original, has this. I don't even know how you describe the taste.
No, it's like Iron Brew. How do you describe Iron Brew to someone?
Exactly. It's so rogue, but so good.
Anyway, so then obviously could you overdose on CBD oil?
Technically, no. They've tested it to really, really high levels, and there's no one's ever overdosed on it, and you can't technically. There's recommended sort of dosing. I think on the dosing side, it's coming, which is really interesting because our bodies are so different. And our bodies react so differently to CBD, especially. Like, for example, I've got two friends who both take our Reset product, and they're both pretty big. They're both like 6'3", both train. Yet one of them is like, you know, we recommend taking 0.5 mil of the pipette, right? Which is 25 milligrams. One of them's like, dude, I've had to start dosing down because that's too much for me. And I couldn't wake up in the morning. And I was like,
wow.
That's hilarious. You're a 6'3" guy who's like a trainer and like you're just massive. And then this another friend of mine who is also 6'3", well built, trains well. He's like, yeah, I have to take 2 mil. I take 2 of the pipettes every time to make sure I get through it to have the effect. So I think there's a really, really big educational piece with CBD, which is, first of all, you need to take it regularly. It builds up in your system. It's not something that you're going to take once and you're going to feel this incredible effect. And I think that's been not a big downfall, but it's been a big thing where people have tried it and they're gone, oh, it didn't do anything to me. They're like expecting this massive chill out zone, like whatever. And it's like, no, that's not how it operates. It builds up in your endocannabinoid system. And you also need to find your personal dosage. So that's why we say, okay, start at 0.5 mil. I think the reason we did that is obviously the pipette we've got is graded rather than telling people to take drops, because we kind of found that telling somebody to take 5 drops, my drops are different to your drops. How do I know if I've taken the drops? It's quite confusing. So what we did was, yeah, as you can see,
I don't want to spill it on my laptop, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So we recommend taking 0.5 mil to start with, which is 25 milligrams, which is still like, it's not a huge amount. So it's something which we'd recommend people to dose up from and see where they get to. Mm-hmm. And you'll kind of take it upwards a little bit and you'll find where your level's at, where your personal level's at, and then go from there and then take that regularly. And I think that's something which is really important to get across to people, because it's kind of like, okay, guys, make sure you're testing it rather than just taking it once and thinking yay or nay, and also take it over a longer period of time. Because then it also, once you stop taking it, you'll sort of see a slow decline as well, and it'll kind of wean out of your body at the same time. And I think on that, I think especially with taking the CBD, we've done an oil which you put underneath your tongue. Basically, the reason for that is you've got a really thin epithelial layer there, so it seeps into your bloodstream really quickly rather than ingesting it, where your bioavailability is going to start reducing. So like, to give you a comparison, the bioavailability of like an oil is sort of 20 to 35%. while sort of gummies and sort of tablets is between 5 and 10%. So that's kind of why we stuck to doing an oil. It's still a little bit funny. I think some people still find it a bit weird sticking something under their tongue. It's something which is not the most common thing to do in public as well. So there's still a few barriers to overcome. But I think it's slowly getting there. And I think, yeah, the most important side of it is encouraging people to take it daily, and then also to play around with the dosing to see where it suits them best, and probably start in the evenings. I think there's some people, like from our side of things, we're obviously working within sort of within the active space. So some people will take it after a hard training session to help with their DOMS and muscle pains and inflammation. Other people will take it in the evenings to help them with their sleep. We always recommend starting with trying to take it in the evenings just to see how you react to it, because your body will just be very, very different from the person next to you. You can't say, oh, we're the same height, the same weight, I need to take the same amount as you. It just doesn't work like that. So that's kind of the recommendation with it.
It's interesting. I find it an incredibly interesting topic at the moment because it's very new. You know, it still does feel, as you say, maybe I guess CBD oil has kind of come on the market over the last couple of years. And there was just like, it felt like there was about five, as I said earlier, 500 different brands just appearing out of nowhere, then vanishing and not really knowing what's going on. But as it does feel like they're starting to get to this point where there's a certain expectation of quality for what you pay for. And then there, it is still kind of early days in the sense that there's no defined what's right or wrong for each person. It's very individual, but it's the same with a lot of things, to be perfectly honest. If you think about individual people's nutrition, sleep patterns, whatever it is, everyone is a different person. Like some people might, for example, be taking, you know, supplementing more protein than someone else who's the same size or whatever. You know, it's very, very personal depending on what you're doing. But it's such an interesting market at the moment. I'm really like fascinated by it, to be honest. And one thing to say about the level out, the reset as well, we've been talking about the fact that it's a little pipette and you drop it under your tongue and half the time it tastes like shit. This doesn't taste like shit. It actually tastes really nice. And I've always had this theory about what I call it's something I've been doing for years, and it's all about like barriers to completion. So barriers that are stopping you to achieve whatever you want to achieve. And like the prime example for me, and that is I've got to do a training session indoors on the bike. If the bike is not on the turbo trainer, that's a barrier to completing it, because it means I've got to set the bike up. If my kit's not clean, that's a barrier to completing it, because I need to get some kit, whatever it is. So it's like, if I have all the time permanently one bike on a turbo trainer, because it's like, okay, it's easy. And my shoes are next to it and there's a towel on it. I put a fresh towel on it after every session. Like it's all there, ready to go. So even if I'm like yesterday, I wasn't particularly motivated to do the session that I had, but because everything was ready, it's like, okay, it's 5 seconds to get ready as opposed to like sorting everything out, which takes, you know, 20 minutes or so. Now, why I relate to that, to this as a barrier to completion, is if it tastes like shit, you don't want to put it in your mouth. Very simple. If it tastes nice, it's like, oh, okay, it's fine. It doesn't really matter. You know, you don't overthink about it. So you just get on with it. And that's like, anything that makes that process, whatever it is, easier is a good thing, quite frankly. It only is a good thing. And I had one more question I wanted to ask you, because I think we've covered a lot about CBD, about what it is, how it's made, kind of tried to like explain some of the try and break it down to people to make it a bit more normal and easy to understand. There's one thing that I do not understand in relation to CBD, and it's the difference between isolate, full spectrum, broad spectrum CBD. So that is,
yeah,
it's very confusing.
So essentially what you're holding there is broad spectrum. So isolate in what it, you know, in a way, in the sense of what the word says, it isolates out the CBD. So isolate only has CBD in it, so it will have no other cannabinoids within it. Broad spectrum is basically it's a formulation of using different cannabinoids. So it will have CBD, CBG, CBC, which are different cannabinoids. So essentially when you're extracting it, the isolate will extract everything and solely have the CBD, right? Mm. Broad spectrum will isolate it and have a variety of cannabinoids, but it won't have THC in it, which is the psychogenic and psychoactive element of marijuana, which basically everyone's like, oh, that gets you high. So that's why neither CBD isolate nor broad spectrum will have any effect on getting you high. And then full spectrum has the full range of cannabinoids, which may include THC and CBN, which basically are the psychogenic elements from cannabinoids, basically. So you've got three different types. Isolate, only CBD. Broad spectrum is a mix of cannabinoids, but not with THC. And full spectrum includes THC and CBN, which is why in this country, you shouldn't really be getting full spectrum. Even if people say full spectrum is zero THC, it's unlikely that that's true. While the broad spectrum one you've got there, so that says broad spectrum, 0% THC. So it's got none of the psychoactive element, which is the illegal substance in the UK, basically. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is that there's something called the entourage effect, which essentially is the idea that there are these different, all the different cannabinoids and different compounds can work together to have a bigger and better impact or effect than solely the isolate, which is why we do broad spectrum CBD, because it's shown to have, it's got a better effect than just an isolate, basically. Yeah. However, it's interesting because within the sports space, we've got this real conundrum / problem. Well, it's not really a problem, but it's essentially, we're personally speaking to various sort of agents of professional sports players in different sort of sports, whether it's football, rugby, etc. And they all go to, their governing body is Informed Sport, right?
Yep.
And Informed Sport don't currently test CBD still, which is quite frustrating because it's like, actually, the athletes in America are using it. You've got British athletes who are playing over in America who might be, England team here, female England team here, but live over there and train with a team out there. They can't take CBD out there, even though it's legal for them to do it out there, because if they come back here and they're playing for internationally, they'll get caught for it. So it's a really difficult one in that respect. But that's kind of like, I've tested both the isolate and the broad spectrum, and I've had full spectrum in the past as well, but we just stick to broad spectrum basically, which we find is the most effective.
Yeah, that's completely fair enough. And then it makes complete sense. It's fascinating that there's, I didn't really think there was three variations of it, but it's fascinating that there's still one variation that does have the hallucinogenic stuff in it. I guess that's kind of, in a simple way, it's like that's the most, or least pure, maybe? Is that a way of thinking about it?
Yeah, but interestingly, it's probably the most effective as well, because actually small levels of THC are really, really quite powerful in what they can do. So the entourage effect of full spectrum is probably better than broad spectrum, but we just can't do that here.
So, fair enough.
I think we'll see as the market develops that it will change, and legalities of THC will change here, and then we'll see small portions of THC within the formulations.
Interesting. And then the last point I wanted to raise was that you do a lot of good stuff for ironically, for the charity that Ben, who introduced us, that he set up, which is the New Normal Charity. So if you do not know the New Normal Charity, TNN, go and check them out. They do so much good stuff involving helping, supporting people with grief and with their mental health, with tons of sort of support classes across, literally, you can basically call insulin from anywhere, which is fantastic. And you support that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I actually got introduced to Ben initially for a product side of things, and we used him as a bit of a guinea pig for Focus early doors, given his cycling abilities and everything. And then he actually told me, I learned about TNN from him and was really, I was so impressed, and so, like, it's just incredible what they're doing. Do you know what I mean? Now they've got 30 talks a month, all through from volunteers helping out. I was just like, look, I want to support this in any way we can. I think mental health is something which resonates, especially from the, active and wellness side of things and staying fit. Personally, I find that, my ability, if I'm stressed out or anything's going on, I'll go and train. I know I can go and sweat it out. I can go there. Well, I've been on so many bike rides where, I'm sure you have as well. You're riding next to somebody, and it's so much easier to talk to someone when you're facing forwards and you've got, you're in the flow, you've got this ability to talk more openly. And I think what they've managed to do is they're breaking down the barriers of this stigma of mental health still has a massive stigma, and I think it shouldn't. But what they're doing is they're powering on and giving people, empowering people to come into talks and open up in a really, really like, not primarily, but it's free, right? Which means the barrier to entry, like we were talking about for all the other things, reduces that, it eliminates that. When therapy is so expensive and it shouldn't be, like, and mental health is so important and we should be helping everyone. It's like, it's that stigmatized that, people's mental health is more important than their physical health in so many ways.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get that across to people, but they're doing such a good job of it. And I think with Ben, I was blown away by what they're doing, and also he's a great character himself, as you know. And we wanted to work with them, wanted to support them. And I think from our side of things, we're giving £1 of every order to TNN. We're also working with our brand ambassadors and people who we work with, and if they put out basically a code that we use, it will give 10% of that order to TNN again. And then above and beyond that, we're trying to raise money and awareness for them. In the month of August, we did a race to nowhere, which was basically a bicycle race with, we had 13 teams in the end, with two teams from Paris, team from Copenhagen, team from Oslo, then a load of London teams. And then lots of teams in London and the UK, and everybody, each team had to complete 10,000 kilometers in a team of 10, which, I mean, we put in a team ourselves, and as people who don't cycle like at that level, it's a lot to add in 250 kilometers a week.
Yeah.
And there were some monsters in Paris who they completed 23,000 kilometers in the month. Wow. And we're just, this is insane, like between 10 of them. But it was a big challenge. And I think we were trying to raise awareness, and there was people from all over the world. When I first I knew they were doing incredible things, but then I remember when I posted a picture on Instagram, on our Level Out Instagram, going, hey, we're doing this to race to nowhere, please support us, blah, blah, blah. I had somebody DM me, and it was somebody who lives in Japan and who lives in Tokyo, and was like, hey, like, I've found TNN really, really helpful. It's helped me get through so many difficult situations. How can I support / get involved? I ride 300 kilometers a week. I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. Let me put you in touch with someone. And we've got them into one of the French teams. And it's like that kind of thing. It just shows how far reaching what they're doing is. Mm-hmm. And I think that's obviously the beauty of, from, they used to do all the talks in person before COVID, then COVID hit, went virtual, which I think obviously we've seen virtual have good and bad effects, but it allows this for one, for first and foremost, but then it also allows to spread that word and make it so easy. And again, another barrier to entry, you don't have to leave your home. You can sit in a comfortable space where you feel comfortable to talk about difficult things. Mm. So that's so powerful in that regard. But then, the Race to Nowhere was an incredible experience. Really good to get people on board from all over the world. Plan of action is to do another one next year, as well as a marathon with a twist as well.
I'm not getting involved in the marathon. Okay,
the marathon, though, it'll be like a relayed marathon. So we're like four people, 10k each. So it's more.
Yeah, I can maybe get involved in that.
That's what we like to hear. But no, I think what they're doing is amazing, and we're super happy that we can support them, and we're going to continue to do that. And love working with Ben on different ideas, and have him challenge me on our ideas as well, which is
really Ben's forte is challenging you on everything you ever say. He's very good at that. He's a very good person to question everything, and that's why I love him. He's great for it. And then finally, the one thing I wanted to ask is what's next for Level Out? What can you say is next for Level Out? Maybe I should say it that way.
I think, I mean, for us, we're focusing on, it's been very organic growth till now. We're just building out a community of people that sort of love our products and we're working with. We're going to be doing various events with twists. I think quite a lot of the time when we're doing stuff, I always ask myself, what would Red Bull do? Just to challenge us, really, yeah. And just be like, how can you make this different? I think that's where I've got a lot of inspiration from for what we're doing and how we're going to create the brand and how we're going to go, which shoots ourselves in the foot because it makes it very difficult because we're trying to do everything quite niche and different and organic. But I believe that's the way we're going to build the longevity in the brand. What's next for us? I think we've got, our roadmap for the next 3 to 4 months is pretty intense. We're with regards to events, we're profiling the community that we're building, these brand ambassadors, and we want to shout about them. We want to create cool events with them. Like 2 weeks ago, we did a sunrise run where we met at 6 a.m. on the Mall with sort of, it was led by two of our sort of ambassadors who are endurance runners. And it was a warm-up run for the sort of marathon. So it was a simple 10K, but we had a small team of like 15 people who got selected out of people who applied to basically do it. And they took a run down the River Thames while the sun was rising. It was the most beautiful day. We lucked out somehow. I don't know how. And they ran and they came back. And that, you know, we want to bring people together to do stuff, build a community where people are actually, they're talking to one another, they're doing stuff. I think right now we've got so many people spending time indoors, not meeting new people. I think the aim of the game is to do stuff where people come, experience something new, get together and can learn from each other as well. And push the boundaries, like take people out of their comfort zones. Like we're going to do dance classes, pole dancing classes. Like there's going to be loads of shit going on, which excites me. And I think that's kind of part of the thing. It's like always just trying to do something a little bit different with a twist. But we're also open to, you know, as a young brand, we're going to see where it takes us. Carry it on. I think like we've got the product range that we've created manages to sort of span various different disciplines, you know, from people who are on stage in theatre productions like Hamilton, Wicked, Prince of Egypt. We've got people all taking the product range there, from yourself as a cyclist, Ben cycling, you know, you're competing to a really high level, to a variety of individuals from mobility to hit, to dance, etc. So I think it's super exciting because we've got so much ahead of us, so much opportunity. It's bloody hard. Like, I'm not going to lie. It is not easy launching a new D2C brand in a really competitive space where you've got so much going on in a market where we can't do ads on Facebook or Instagram because you can't pay for that because CBD is apparently still illegal in their eyes. Yeah. And so, you know, we've got our challenges, but I love it. And I think it's something which we're going head first. And sort of, and also I'm getting the opportunity to meet people like yourself. Do you know what I mean? Like being put in touch with people through Ben and loads of different people. And it's kind of like, there's this myriad of individuals that I get to meet. And that's a lot of the time why I'm building this community. Cause I get to meet yourself. I get to meet, like, you know, we're talking about Movember. I sent you that voice note, like Jono, who's a trainer at One Rebel, who was at the event last week talking about Movember. And I'm like, hold on, can we connect the two? How can we do these things? How can we bring people together who their paths would never cross, but I get the exposure to them. Yeah. So that's also something which I'm really excited about and keen to see where it kind of leads, because there are so many different opportunities. Like I should put you in touch. I've got a friend who's a cyclist in Paris. He just blown up on TikTok, like out of nowhere. I'm talking like, you've got it. By the way, you've got to check him out. He's called Beast on a Bike. He's got 21 million views he's just doing rollers. And he did his first, he basically unpackages his first video that went live. It was him first day on his rollers. He'd never used rollers before, but he's an amazing cyclist. He's the one who brought in two teams for a race to nowhere. Yeah. And he hit 1.5 million views on that one. And he's got 20 million views on another one. It's like, two weeks ago he started this, and he's like, it's ridiculous. You've got to watch his stuff. But
followed him.
I love that. But yeah, it's that interaction. I think I'm fortunate to have that, and that's gonna be exciting for us to do.
That's, I mean, ironically, I empathize a lot with that, because one of the big reasons I first started doing the podcast when. In Spain, when I was locked in Spain, effectively, when lockdown first started in March last year, or whatever it was, March, April last year, I was stuck in Spain and I was with a bunch of mates. And I was like, I've been in an iron about doing a podcast for ages. And I was like, fuck it, let's record some episodes here, because why not? We've got nothing else to do. We're not allowed outside. And it's been, for me, it's all about having those opportunities to talk to people that I find interesting fundamentally, and who I think every person I've spoken to in the podcast, that has never been scripted really, but like there's obviously certain things that you talk about, but it's never particularly scripted. It's all about how the conversation goes, and whatever comes up. But the reason why I do it is because it's I find it interesting, and it's the opportunity to meet really interesting people, and for some reason people like listening to that. So we said win-win-win. It's a triple win, not even a double win, it's a triple win. And you know, what I'm finding, you know, there's been a lot of unfortunate, very horrible things that have happened from what's happened over the last year and a half, 2 years now, even nearly, but there's so many strengths that have come off it. And you argue that yes, we maybe not have not been able to see people as much. Like there's been much less, you know, peer-to-peer interaction. But for me personally, anyway, the interaction I've had with new people through doing things like this podcast is much higher than it's ever been, you know, and I'm really thankful for it and getting to meet people like yourself and trying out crazy stuff.
No, I think I completely resonate with you exactly. It's allowed that and it's brought that to the forefront, and I think it's something which people we can't devalue. We need to appreciate.
Amazing. And how can people follow you?
Well, check us out on our website, levelout.co.uk, Instagram, level__out. We've got a TikTok, but I wouldn't go on it right now until we get some decent content. But yeah, that's it. Basically, if you have any questions, anybody can DM us, you know, Instagram, we're pretty quick on it. So yeah, that's basically it. Or you can hit us up at hello@levelout.co.uk as well, if you're an email kind of person. But yeah, super easy.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And look after your plants in the background. They're lovely.
Always, always. No, thanks so much for having me, Chris. Honestly, a pleasure.
Thank you.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.